Warning, the following podcast may contain language that some listeners may find offensive or confusing or intriguing. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to the 3v3 podcast, your socially distanced hockey chat show. Here are your hosts, Cassie, Pat, and Patrick.
This is a Quentin Byfield Stan account.
Okay, thank you for stating the obvious, but... Would you like to elaborate why it's a Stan account?
No, because if you need me to elaborate, you weren't paying attention. You weren't watching hockey.
That's because
you weren't even looking at stats.
Or you live on the East Coast.
Cassie, We don't talk about that.
We should, but we don't.
Because everyone else talks about it. If you are not watching Quentin Byfield, you are doing yourself a disservice.
And hey, would you look, he's playing at a reasonable hour on the East Coast as we're recording.
Against an East Coast team.
A guy who is fourth on his team in points given he plays almost 2 minutes less than everyone ahead of him.
Good times,
pretty good.
Yeah, he might be. And gets bounced around, too, in the lineup. Because I think I made the comment somewhere earlier that if Quentin Byfield's on your line, it's to get your line going because he is a line starter.
Oh, if Patrick.
PLD's on your line, it's to get him going, and he's generally going to kill your line.
So we're not going to go into the debate about plus minus, but... There's a story to be told there in that number. Who's first on the team in plus minus?
That, I believe, would be number 55, Quentin Byfield.
Yes, he's currently a plus 17, not taking today's inaction game into account. Who is last on the team in plus minus?
That would be one number 80, Pierre-Luc Dubois.
At a minus 19. Now... Does that mean one player is good, one player is bad, one player is working, one player is lazy?
Yes.
But something is going right for one individual through his own efforts, because as you suggested, he's bounced around a lot in the lineup. And not so great for someone else. And there are players all the way in between. You know, they have a couple, a minus 12, a minus 7, a plus 14, a plus 11. So there's a wide range of some players are doing well with others. Some players are struggling with others. And there are two common denominators.
One's paid $8 million a year for the next 8 years. The other one's still on his ELC. And should be making $8 million a year for the next 8 years, if not more.
But probably won't.
Maybe.
Depends who signs that contract.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah. He's just so damn fun to watch because when he gets going, I've said it before and I'll say it again, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Mike Modano. The jersey starts flapping in the wind when he gets going at speed. And it's just this big frame just, you know, taking people wide and making you regret life because it's, you know, velocity and force, you know. Mass times velocity equals force. So you got that much mass going at that kind of speed. It's going to hurt. Yeah.
You know what else hurts? Trying to predict the Penguins, as we debated last week.
God, you guys are so weird. I called it.
You called the event in the game. I was slightly off in the score prediction.
Well, yeah, I called last night's game, I guess, last week.
Well, you've called pretty much every game, because apparently that is their pattern, Cassie, as you stated.
Get up early,
lose it in third.
Can't
and you got a 50-50 on whether they come back to win.
So and I can tell you why. This isn't going to be a pretty a pretty thing, but I guess losing kind of isn't really. Now I'm going to cast stones at someone that is not normally cast stones at for this particular reason. It's a lack of leadership, and it's all on Sidney Crosby. Not because he's a bad leader, because we have established that he is one of the best captains in the NHL, but because of Sidney Crosby being Sidney Crosby. I think, now granted, this is just my personal opinion, but I think the issue is that, you know, Crosby is the kind of guy who leads by example. The problem with leading by example is that people have to want to follow that example.
So, Cassie, finish.
Okay. And in his case, it's not a matter of people not wanting to do what he does. It's a matter of people not thinking they can do what he does.
Cassie?
Yes.
Would you say he's lost the room?
No.
And I say that sarcastically, but also kind of seriously.
Which room, though?
His.
Oh, the dressing room?
Yeah.
No, that's not the problem.
I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem is that he's trying to lead by example, and he is on a team that needs verbal reassurance. And he's not giving that verbal reassurance to people. He's just trying to show them what to do, and they don't want to do what he does because they don't think they can do what he does.
But this is different from the past, so that kind of makes me wonder if he's lost the room.
No, I don't think he has lost the dressing room. He has the front office confused. He is still, I'll say it, a very elite player in this league.
Yeah.
He is not a player you build around anymore, though. And that is where the last three regimes, and I'll include Dubas's regime in this, whether he's doing this intentionally to prove a point to his bosses or not, which is my conspiracy theory to a certain extent. He still wanted Carlson, but everyone is trying to build around Crosby instead of bump him down in the lineup. Look at what the Dallas Stars did several years ago. You had Seguin, you had Ben. They're just a year or two younger than Sidney Crosby. What did they do? They accumulated younger, talented players who stepped up and took the first line roles from everyone of a certain age, excluding Captain America, because, you know, reasons. He defies logic. Everything that's special about him came out of a bottle.
See, the problem with the Pittsburgh Penguins at this point, losing the lead after having it and not being able to regain it, is that I think everybody on that team is waiting for Crosby to, like, step up and win it for them, and he can no longer carry a team by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the issue, is that he's got to figure out how to lead a group of guys who need that verbal reassurance that they're doing good and they can do better, and they can, like, you know, yeah, they made a mistake, but maybe they need to, like, switch things up a little bit, and, you know, they need someone who can verbally, like, reassure them, and Crosby's not doing that, I don't think. I don't think he's that kind of guy.
It's not like the modern day Oilers who can just rely on Connor and or Leon to drag them somewhere when they just don't have it.
Right, they don't.
And the Penguins don't have that option available to them.
Right, and so when I say everybody is waiting for Crosby to turn it up a notch and to carry the team and to, like, get them that win, I mean everybody. I mean, like, Letang and Carlson and Malkin, they're all sitting back going, okay, Sid, it's your turn. You know? Nobody's stepping up, and Sid can't do it by himself. So that's the issue, is that he's got to, like, round up his leadership group and be like, okay, guys, we need to figure this out differently, because it's leadership. The only reason that, and of course, you know, his coach follows Crosby's lead, So the coach is also waiting for Crosby to step up and do something. And he is at a point in his career where he can't. If he could, they would not be in this situation. Right? So it's like I said, it's not a pretty discussion to have, because like, you know, you're pointing fingers at Crosby in leadership, and you know, he's a good leader. I'm not saying he's not, but how he leads, the manner in which he leads, is not suitable for the team he currently has.
The LA Kings won two cups more than 10 years ago, and then they took a dip. And then what did they do? They finally got some good younger players. Everything isn't on Zay Kopitar. There's a little too much on PLD, but we've already, you know, talked about that ad nauseum.
I'd say we could stop beating a dead horse, but it's been dead for the last 5 years. So, you know, at least it's playing like it's been dead for the last 5 years. Okay, yeah. Enough. I'll stop. Mute.
And wouldn't you look at, since the coaching change, since they removed the veteran coach who knows how to, you know, squeeze that extra 1-2% out of the team, and it wasn't working with a younger group, certain things are just starting to work again. Just like the rest of us, for whatever reason, professional sports, people are just committed to doing things the same way over and over again with the same group, no matter whether it makes sense or not, where the rest of us in the real world attempt to move on whenever possible.
You know, the funniest thing to me about that coaching change, Pat, is the fan base. I don't say everyone. There's a number of people like, oh, thank God, finally, you know, somebody who'll get PLD ice time, you know, blah, blah, blah. And the experiment worked for 2.5-3 games and went right back to where it was. So maybe coach wasn't the real problem there.
No. Weird. No. But sometimes it's just like, get this one person out of the way who is, he's doing things counterproductively.
He is the vampire of the team.
Yeah, it's not that his intentions aren't pure and that he doesn't have everyone's best interest in mind. It's just his approach is causing too many issues. The new guy, okay, he tried something. As soon as it didn't work, what did he do?
Went right back to what did work.
Exactly. Actually,
no, he went back to largely what worked and moved the guy who was working around in the lineup to get everyone else going. Mm-hmm. I mean, the power play at the start of the year was not working when it had PLD on the first unit. Got him off the first unit, put Byfield on there. Byfield went and parked in front of the net, went the big banger, dig out of the corner, all the kind of mucky, grindy stuff that old hockey men love to talk about, but it actually is applicable. And next thing you know, power play's going.
So this afternoon,
new coach comes in, punts PLD back up, power play starts to go cold, punts PLD off, power play starts to go hot. I don't need stats on power plays. I don't need stats to see that there is a black hole, you know, when a certain player is out there.
Or when you're doing something in a certain way that's counterintuitive to everyone outside your room.
Yeah, and it's not a fit. It is clearly not a fit. Player construction or whatever, it is not a fit.
Yeah. If you look at time on ice for the current game that is going on, currently 2-1 Kings at intermission against the Devils. Quentin Byfield, second in time on ice among the 11 forwards, because they're going 11-7. Which is a shade over 7 minutes, including a full minute of power play time, mostly with Kevin Fiala. Pierre-Luc Dubois is last. Fewest shifts, 3 minutes, 33 seconds of ice time. But hey, he was actually able to put up an assist in limited time.
Well, because he actually went into the corner and dug a puck out.
And when you only get so many chances to do a thing, it's surprising what can happen. I'm not going to say giving him the Daniel Sprong treatment is going to, you know, cure all the ails he's facing in LA, but can't argue with what's working.
Yeah, you know, I see this and I just, I don't know, given what's gone on with some of the other players, it makes me think there's something he's going through. You know,
it might. So take a little bit of the pressure off him. Just let him be a player on the team. He doesn't have to drive a line. He doesn't have to fill a very specific role. He's just a player who goes out every couple minutes. Because clearly it's something he's trying to play through.
I don't think it's physical, Pat.
I don't disagree.
You know, you sort of see a pattern, you know, once is an accident, twice is a coincidence, three times is a pattern, right? Mm-hmm. But these are all different people. But the pattern of behavior of spikes of brilliance followed by long periods of blah. Mm-hmm. Spikes of brilliance, long period of blah. That maybe sound a little bit like Evgeny Kuznetsov. You know, I don't claim to know anything. Mm-hmm. I just see a pattern.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, he may be injured, but I don't know. I don't know. This is such a turmoil for me because I will bag on him every day until he figures it out. But I also am empathetic to what we can't see that might be causing him to play this way. And, you know, I sit there and struggle with, is it fair for me to continue to dump on him if he is going through something like that? And I'm just guessing. This is wild ass speculation. I mean, I know absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. But it's a pattern. And, you know, I'm not saying it's substance abuse. I'm not saying it's anything of like that. It could be, you know, anxiety. It could be, you know, any number of things, you know, non sort of self-destructive. But I don't know. It just, I get that weird, goofy feeling.
It could be just a 25-year-old.
Yeah.
Which I think back to, I had no clue what I was doing at 25.
Most people don't.
Well, exactly, Pat, to that just, I was actually going to say, you know, are we looking at Alexander Daigle 2.0?
Maybe.
You know.
The talent's there. The skill is there. Right. But he is not a bad player. He is not what everyone puts him up to being. And there's no telling whether that's what's holding him back and weighing him down, or if it's just, oh, he just completely moved to a different coast. Everything has changed in his life, and maybe he just needs to be the guy that bounces around and never gets too comfortable because something about that works for him and whatever his personality that he develops is. Who knows?
I don't know. I mean, good on him. You know, he signed the contract that was put in front of him. Not a mm-hmm. single one of us is going to say no to that. Yeah. Oh, no, I'm not worth it.
Also, right. He has struggled. He's probably taking criticism, both to his face and behind the scenes, and I don't hear a peep. Now, hopefully he has someone that he can, you know, work through whatever that's, you know, whatever feelings that might be creating for him. But he's handling it from the outside looking in like a professional. Like, yep, okay.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure going from Columbus, where you're sheltered from, you know, the media frenzy, to Winnipeg, where you become just absolutely engulfed in it, to LA, where it's like, I think, you know, probably above Columbus, but significant below Winnipeg or Vancouver.
More laid back.
Yeah.
Maybe not less attention, but more laid back.
Easier to sort of take away or leave it at the rink type thing. Mm-hmm. I don't. I hope he's okay. I hope he figures it out. But until then, he's gotta show something on the ice. It's just this team is only going to go as far as its weakest link, right?
Yeah.
And he is significantly that weakest link.
And hey, he's a guy, his entire time in Columbus, he played for one coach. When he was in Winnipeg, okay, he was there, and then he experienced his first, you know, coaching change or in-season change when Paul Maurice left during kind of the pandemic years. And now he's going through another coaching change.
Mm.
Sometimes it just comes down to fit, and you know what? Contract and place, location, that's all great, but did he have a good fit with good old Todd there for a bit? And does he have a fit with the interim coach?
No, playing, you know, new guy did exactly what the old guy did, which tells you that maybe the old guy was right.
Yeah, oftentimes they are. Like Hiller, you know, Jim Hiller, he's probably tweaking a few things here or there. All right, I've had this intuition. Let me see if this works. Okay, nope. All right, let's just go to, you know, what we had.
Speaking of guys that get it and have evolved, the Flyers pregame yesterday, Saturday, for those of you listening at home who aren't listening in on our broadcast right now, stealing ideas from us, did a really good piece on John Tortorella and his Hockey Hounds program in Philly. And Al Morganti, the great Al Morganti, is the panelist for their in-studio pregame. And he and the co-host, and I'm sorry, I forget her name, she's really good at hosting, though. After the piece was done, really made an effort to call out, you know, that's the John Tortorella we all know. You know, when he is at work, he is at work. When he is away from work, that's John Tortorella. And they made a point to call out, you know, that he takes a lot of crap from the press unjustifiably. And I was like, good on you. Good on you. And to see John's face light up when one of the dogs that they were sheltering had been adopted and sent back and adopted and sent back. And they were really struggling to find a place for it. And it was kind of getting to that point, you know. They had hidden from John that she had been adopted like a couple days prior to him showing up. And so when they told him, he just lit up like a little kid on Christmas. And it was just like, yep. How can you hate that man? How can you hate that man?
That's not the guy that they see and interact with on a daily basis.
The guy that they see and interact with on a daily basis has no time for their crap because he's got more important things to do than to tell you, write your column for you by answering your vague question, so that you can just print his quote directly and not have to use your own damn brain. I'm in a ranty mood, so somebody may need to change the subject again.
Or we just keep putting logs on the fire.
No, shut up. No. Damn it, Pat. You're going to bring up Shane Wright, and that's just going to ruin my weekend full tilt.
Nope. I have stayed clear of that subject for quite some time, and I wasn't going down that path. Because what has fundamentally changed in Seattle? Nothing. A GM that likes the slow approach, which is clearly working for the player this season.
Because he's getting to play hockey somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Consistently with the same players and the same location, and he can keep his stuff in one place.
He gets ice time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, newsflash, this just in, young player who wasn't able to play hockey pretty much for 2.5 years is playing hockey consistently and getting better at hockey, film at 11, you know? It's the same thing with Byfield, right? Everybody was dragging on him because, you know, they're seeing Stützle and going, ha, 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 you know? And I'm going, yeah, come talk to me in like 3 years when Byfield's actually playing regular minutes. Oh, now look at where we're at. Oops.
Yeah. You could even say the same of Alex Lafreniere, where he was getting ice time. He was playing on a team, but it was never consistent. He was never on a power play with any regularity. He was never getting minutes with a ton of offensive players. It was just a bunch of other guys trying to figure it out when they may not have been playing a ton of hockey. Now, he's not lighting the world on fire quite like Byfield.
But he's been consistent. You know,
he's been consistent. He's been reliable.
Yeah. They haven't needed him to be the number one overall pick. You know?
And going back to Seattle, a team that's meandering, falling back further and further back in the Pacific. They are mediocre at best. Why does he need to prosper there right now? Or just put up points a la players in Anaheim who have put up points for years and years, but nothing has come out of it.
Anaheim can't field a team. Wright doesn't. He doesn't need to put up points in Seattle.
Just complete one full season. One full season in the AHL. Next season is where the clock is on. Because he certainly, given whatever roster changes they end up making, he certainly has a spot he can win on that roster. Given they have at least four UFAs, they've got several, you know, players who their bottom six talent that he can outperform, and he can probably play pretty good defense too, might I add. So what happens with him and the head coach next season?
God, I hope the head coach is gone so we don't have to worry about it.
Probably take him like botching or having a difference of opinion as to where Wright should be with Francis.
I almost feel like there are days I want Ron Francis to, you know, Moneyball Billy Bean this. You know, why aren't you playing the lineup the way I have it designed? Because this doesn't work. Okay. You know, the guy I want in, you're not playing, so I'm going to go trade the guy that you are constantly playing. So that you're forced to play this guy.
Oh, yeah. Just what you want, power struggle between the coach and the GM.
Well, it's already kind of there, though, Cassie, because all the time he had, you know, all those times he had Wright called up, you know, they actually did kind of come out in the press and say they had a bit of a difference of opinion.
Right, but Francis is still sitting back and trying to be hands-off.
Yeah, I think he might be long gaming it.
I think he very much so. That fits his MO. And also, at least he is doing right by the player and not making him the call up. They're letting other guys take the 5 minutes a night. It's not necessarily benefiting the big club, but it's, you know, good for those players while Wright continues to, I'm not even say develop at the AHL. He just needed to play and just regain that. Oh, here's this thing that makes him special. There's nothing, you know, he's not McDavid. He's not Byfield. He is just a good all around player who just needs to play consistently.
Like it's a jib of a Kopitar, a Bergeron.
Mm-hmm. There there was nothing special or remarkable about Patrice Bergeron. He just did it the same way over, over, over it again. And might I say, he also benefited from a first full season in the AHL.
Yeah, he's just going to turn into one. Wright's going to just turn into one of those players that, like, as he plays more, he's just going to get better and improve. And by the time he hits his late 20s, he'll be, you know, where people expected him to be when he was drafted in the first round, you know, at 22. So he's just going to have a longer arc than people expected, I think, because of COVID and all of that.
God damn you hockey people.
Does it make it any less frustrating to watch how they're trying to botch his development even as he's trying to be developed? But, you know.
Yeah. You know, victim of circumstance in a certain sense, right? Too good for the CHL, not old enough for the AHL, had to kind of waste a season pittering around, you know. Then second year, I don't have any clue what they were doing.
None. They probably didn't have any clue what they were doing. I'm sure at that point it was Francis having an expectation that wasn't being voiced, and Hextall just doing what he wanted to do. And them kind of realizing at the end of the season going, you know, that's not the way that I wanted that to happen.
I really
look right.
I wish I could do the calf.
February. Not the best month in the world. And that's all you heard about it. He's going through his first full 82-game season. He's probably hitting his roadblocks. He's had a couple stretches in December that were kind of like that. All right, now he's going through one again, maybe a little less so. And he's just learning how to survive the grind of the way too long of a season that will never change because they can't make money otherwise. Quantity over quality.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of hockey tickets.
Thank you. Yes, please. Speak of hockey tickets and your pending adventure.
Oh, God. For those who haven't been in the market for a hockey ticket in a while, it's an adventure. And not necessarily in a good way. So, you know, weekend games are more expensive than weekday games. If you want to sit in the end that the home team shoots twice, that's more expensive than the other end. You know, there's all kinds of little things going on with that, right? So, I wasn't sure I really wanted to go, mostly because of, you know, the price of hockey tickets being absurd. And by the way, the Boston Bruins announced a week or two ago that they were raising prices by 10% next season.
So, and they're not the only team.
Nope. And so, so I was looking at the secondary market because there wasn't a lot in the, you know, Ticketmaster market. And where I wanted to sit, which, you know, if you watch hockey long enough, you have a very specific place where you want to sit in the rink. I think we all do. Yeah, I like sitting in the end of the team I'm watching, going to watch. In this case, it's Pittsburgh. I couldn't care less about Boston. In a corner across from the benches in the end that the team I want to watch is shooting twice. I didn't get those seats. Those seats are actually going for $430 or something like that because it's a weekend. They hiked it up $100 from the weekday. But, and then nothing in the upper deck. Everything that was available in the upper deck was the top three rows of the upper deck. The rafters. And they were still going for, I think the cheapest I saw on the secondary market was $175. Literally in the rafters. And at the end, the Boston wasn't shooting twice. So that was actually the cheaper end of the rink. But I came across, it's not ideal, but it's still better than the rafters. A ticket that someone was selling for $150. Which is still honestly quite a lot for any sporting event, but you know, compared to like 430, not a bad deal. In the end of the end, I wanted to be in and seven rows up from the ice, which is a little low for me, but yeah. And because it's just me, I usually go by myself to these games, although I haven't gone in a while. It's really easy to find a single seat. It's much harder to find two, and if you have need more than two, it's much harder than that. So unfortunately, I'm right in the middle of the section, which sucks. I prefer to be on the, you know, near the aisles, mostly because I prefer to be inconvenienced over inconveniencing others. So next weekend, next Saturday, it's an afternoon game. I have a ticket to go watch Pittsburgh play in Boston. Long preamble, I know, but there you go.
No, because this highlights something kind of a little bit parallel, tangential, perpendicular. I don't care. Pick one. The Sharks. Man, you want to talk about an aftermarket that is flooded with low, cheap stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, and that was the thing, too, is that I got lucky because Boston's not been playing well for the last week or two. So there were a lot of people willing to, like, cut the prices on the secondary market.
Yeah, and then you also, but then it also goes up because the opponent, you know, there's all of that kind of stuff that comes into play.
Yeah.
And it so my conversations with people in San Jose, it is the only games that are that you see spikes in are when McDavid comes to town, when Crosby comes to town, when Ovechkin comes to town. Mm-hmm. Everything else is kind of flat. So and they're still going to raise their prices.
Yeah, I was nice living in San Jose when I was 2 miles from the rink, literally just go down the street a block and then take a left and it was 2 miles. It was easy to get tickets. One of the benefits of being in a town where the team's doing so well.
I was listening to an interesting discussion about, you know, the rising of the season ticket price, not necessarily just, you know, single game tickets. Mm-hmm. How they compared and contrast, okay, NHL team in Carolina who they're playing well, they're playoff bound, they have an opportunity to compete for a championship. Mm-hmm. It makes sense that, okay, more and more people want to go out to that sort of thing, that, you know, that your fair weather groups or your casual fans are just more interested because it's a little more engaging versus the last place NFL football team in the state. They're raising prices and they couldn't fill that stadium by giving away tickets if they tried. And they're wondering if we are hitting this weird peak of demand for sports tickets coming out of COVID, how everyone just wanted to go to events. And are we reaching the peak of that moment where I've been to, I want to say, 4 hockey games this year, 2 in Carolina, 1 Wild game, and then 1 women's game. And I might be able to sneak 1 or 2 more in before the end of the regular season. I just wait on opportunity, but I'm curious about the heavy demand
these teams are using to honestly justify the rates at which they're raising prices.
Yeah, I mean, there was a Sarah Sivian had, when Boston made the announcement that they're raising ticket prices, season ticket holder prices, and just single seats. She had tweeted that there are a lot of people who feel like they're being priced out of season tickets in Boston. So,
and that is kind of what I'm thinking is going to start happening. You know, the demand is not superseding the supply by a vast amount. Generally, when it does, that's when you can raise prices because you still have a massive surplus in demand that can backfill. I don't believe we're seeing it, because add to that, you know, the whole socio-political economic system is way out of whack, right? So it is harder for a lot of people to justify $200-$300 for 2 hours of entertainment.
There's also, I was talking with my friend Scott at work about this a couple days ago, and he was saying that he had heard in Boston they want to go the way Toronto has, where the lower bowl is all corporate.
Well, I wish you luck.
If you can do it, I don't blame you.
You know, expect if you can do it, God bless you. But you know what it leads to? Because you see it in Toronto. It's like, where's the home ice advantage?
And here's the other crazy thing. I know Patrick and I probably see this in the tech sector, but companies aren't spending. They're cutting. Because they, everyone was flush with cash and told just spend. So that's what the companies did when they were given all this money from, you know, fake money. Let's be honest. It's all made up. Finances, currency, all made up. But they were told to spend, and now it's like, all right, I want some return. Tell me about your reserves. We got to slow down a little. What do you mean a reserve? You told me to spend. So we're in this weird cycle of, are there going to be companies that can actually float another Toronto team?
Right.
I'm not so sure.
It doesn't look great on TV either, right? Because like the lower bowl's half empty. Because, you know, nobody's using those tickets, but it's guaranteed money for the teams.
I have been watching, amazingly enough, it's good ASMR, by the way. I've been watching plane spotting feeds, as I've probably mentioned before. I watched one the other night from Incheon, Seoul Airport in South Korea. On the tarmac, parked, and I mean parked, they had everything covered up, and the planes looked buttoned up could be. They had five Airbus A380s. And if you're not familiar with the A380, it is the double-decker, massive Airbus airplane. Five of them sitting there from one airline, buttoned up, looking like they were actually being parted out because they had bought them.
Mothballed. That's the word you're looking for.
Yeah. No, I was getting mothballed. They've, you know, people are asking if it's permanent or not. And Korean Air is kind of like, you know, they bought them when the demand was there, the demand went away, and now they're stuck with one of the most expensive planes to operate out there. And so the best thing for them to do was to mothball them, because it just, you know, even at a 70, I think somebody said even at 75% capacity on one of those things, they were still losing mass amount of money because of all the ancillary costs to operate that airplane. Fuel. I love this one. Gate fees, because they do actually charge you by weight at some of the airports. So imagine, you know, hauling two decks of people all of their luggage and potentially cargo and fuel. All I mean, it's just hysterical the cost that would be. It's such an impractical airplane. And it comes back to, there was a spike in, this sort of runs parallel, there was a spike in demand after COVID. Everybody and their dog wanted to travel, right? Mm-hmm. And now that they started raising prices, fewer people are traveling. So
it's also because, just like, general inflation too.
Yeah.
Has spiked.
Well, yeah. And that's, you know, it all ties in, right? When you start talking about discretionary spending, you know, am I going to spend $400 to go watch a hockey game for 2 hours?
Right.
More than maybe once a year or twice a year.
That's the key. Can I do this more than once? The concept of taking a family of four to an event is dead unless you are, you know, a 7-figure salary or high 6 figures, just because of the rising cost of everything else. Yeah. But have you noticed, you know, we talked about, oh, the PWHL is now pulling in these record crowds. And today, Caitlin Clark, a university women's basketball player for the University of Iowa, set the record for most points scored in NCAA history, men's or women's. Celebrities coming out, you know, veterans of the game, just former stars, all being there to see this one moment. Man, it sure is easy to watch a women's basketball game on TV these days. It sure is easier to pay the admission cost for your family of four to some of these other remarkable sporting events.
There, it's the knock-on effect of benefiting.
Mm-hmm.
When you're priced out of one market, another market steps in to fill your want. Mm-hmm.
And what the NHL has a problem now is what market will take their piece of the pie, because it's not like it's going to be the AHL. It's going to be a different sport, potentially.
Well, it's going to be the PWHL.
It'll be the PWHL in Canada. We'll see in the U.S.
The problem with that, though, is that if it does become the PWHL, then they're going to expand far too quickly in order to fill that gap.
Yes.
And that's going to, like, cause all kinds of problems. People want to sit there and say, dilute the talent pool. It's like, yes and no. But mostly it's going to be, there just isn't enough players available to expand the way that they're going to want to, because suddenly everyone can, you know, are priced out of NHL games and they're going to want to go to PWHL games. And that means, oh, let's put these teams in all these markets. And where are you going to get the players?
I'm so happy you went there, because I think that is the first thing the PW has to guard against, because I think there is a talent pool there, but they need to mature in certain markets and then slowly add on teams, and don't do what baseball of the mid to late 90s did. Don't do what the NHL of the 2000s did and add too many teams on a scheduled basis.
And they're going to, because they're going to want it, because, you know, it's like at this point, everything is let's max out profit now and we'll just kick the can down the road and deal with the future when it comes.
What I would say is, what if they developed a plan based on graduation cycles for players? There's enough NCAA grads or players who can come overseas after their European contracts expire to then populate some of these teams. Like, have a more detailed plan than just, okay, in 3 years' time, we're going to add this franchise and this franchise. Like, I think there is a way where they can add multiple teams relatively quickly, but just don't bank on, oh, I'm just going to throw something in this market in this year and everything's just going to work out.
Oh, no, that's what they're totally going to do. They're going to do what the men do. Because they think that.
Well, the men. One. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, the one thing that does work in the PWHL's favor is short-term contracts. All the players have short-term contracts, mostly 1 years. A scant, you know, half dozen to, you know, let's say 10 to 20 2-year contracts, and then very select players got the big 3-year deals because the players wanted stability over, you know, making top dollar.
Yeah, they're not going to do that. They're going to throw that all out the window and be like, well, there's such a huge demand for women's hockey, let's just put it everywhere without like a nicely considered plan where they can grow the game in a deliberate fashion, because that's not what the men did. So let's do what the men did, because they're obviously successful because that's what they're doing now. So I don't have really high hopes. Can you tell?
It's the original six expansion, I think, is the one that really did the most damage for a while, Pat.
Mm-hmm.
And from 6 to 12, because, and then having them dispersed the way they did just made, you know, everyone complains about Gretzky records in the '80s because it was the '80s. I'm like going, and you're going to tell me Bobby Orr, when he got to run roughshod through six completely unqualified teams for most of his career. Okay, fine. You know, cute.
Yeah, people are going to want to ride the wave and maximize as much as they can. They're going to kick the can down the road and be like, well, if it doesn't work out in the future, we'll deal with that later.
I just like the New Jersey Devils goaltending.
You know, you have just that ability to do that, Pat. You pulled it right in there as they yanked one goalie for the other. All of them sub 900.
Mm-hmm. Is it the goalies or is it the team?
Claude Julien, where are you? The Devils need you more than you will know.
Again?
Yeah.
Devils coach again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he had 2 turns in Montreal. Let's, you know, let's completely make his career symmetrical.
So is Devils...
the heaviest of retreads?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are Devils management playing the fool's game where, okay, if we get so many points this week, we'll do one thing, or if we're not, we'll do another thing, because this week is silly season where there's too much speculation and not enough. Oh, we could have addressed this problem 2 weeks ago, but we decided to wait till the very last minute. Because New Jersey... getting Jacob Markstrom now, even if they want to pay for his full salary, season sunk.
Hockey, procrastinating, thinking that they have like all the time in the world, you don't say.
Has anyone sufficiently explained why they jumped into that trade and retained salary?
I don't know. Was that like a future considerations kind of move?
No.
I mean, not specifically written out, but in a I scratch your back and you'll scratch mine down the road kind of thing.
I don't think that either.
They technically can't do that. Now, doesn't mean that they aren't doing double, you know, some backdoor dealing, right? Mm-hmm. They closed the loophole where you could trade salary retention for future. So there had to be something tangible sent to New Jersey. So it lessens that kind of backdoor dealing type stuff, Cassie, because mm-hmm. you have to remove somebody from your franchise for someone else to retain salary.
Well, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking quid pro quo, where...
Well, that's what I'm trying to get to, Cassie, is like, I now have to make the decision to give up on a player in my organization to give to them, that somewhere down the line, there's going to be some reciprocation.
Right.
Right? And I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's totally backdoor, right? Mm-hmm. And if you think about the mindset of those guys, they all love everybody on their roster.
Until they don't.
AHL, they all love everyone in their franchise, right?
Until they don't. In their
prospect pool. And, until they don't. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if there's another one of those. Oh, this player we got in this three-way trade where we retained salary, we sent back to the Anaheim Ducks. Whoops.
Welcome to the moneyballization of the trade deadline, where everyone and their brother has figured out how much a fourth round pick is worth to them. And apparently for the New Jersey Devils, 50% of whatever is remaining on Chris Tanev's salary for this season was less than the cost of acquiring a fourth round pick otherwise. I really just think it's a money game where they have a monetary evaluation for everything. What every position on a team is worth, what every position in the AHL is worth, what every draft pick this year, next year, and 3 years out is worth.
I mean, I'm sure they did.
And it doesn't make a lick of sense to a rational person. I mean, if you got the money and you want to spend it, go for it. But at least in New Jersey's case, helping Calgary or Dallas doesn't really affect them too much the remainder of the season. I've heard all the jokes that Carolina just made Toronto significantly worse by allowing them to get a goaltender who subsequently got hurt in his first game. So, you know, whatever.
There always has to be a, how does this impact Toronto?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the guy got hurt, and that's what makes it funny.
I know.
Not for the player, unfortunately. But hey, he got to spend some time out on the coast, probably enjoyed his time in Orange County, California. And yeah, now he goes someplace where he doesn't have to learn everyone's name. He probably knows most of the players.
Can anyone actually enjoy Orange County, though?
Thank you. That's what I was asking. Does anyone really ever enjoy Orange County? I mean, unless you get like a VIP pass to Disney or something, is there any joy?
Yeah,
OC.
I have a friend who lives there, and I'm like, but does she really enjoy it? I don't think so. She travels a lot. Kind of implies to me that she wants to not be there.
Like all those people that say that Chicago's the greatest city in the world, yet when you meet them, they're living somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. No, Chicago's the greatest, one of the greatest cities to visit, and then you leave, and then you realize, oh, I could never live there. It's too... Chicago. Those are Boston Bruins prices I'm trying to pay for rent.
No, it's people in Ohio saying Ohio's the best state to live in, and then you see that all of those astronauts are from Ohio. Like, is it really? Why is everybody trying to leave the planet?
Why are there pockets of Pittsburgh fan bases in every city that you know?
I watched the Hurricanes broadcast a few weeks ago, and they said they were having, I forget who they were playing, but it wasn't the Penguins. They were on the road, and they were having a watch party in Cary. And I thought, why? They aren't playing the Penguins. And they weren't playing the Rangers. So why are they having a watch party in the hotbed of Penguin Ranger fandom?
Cary, North Carolina, also known as Central Area for Relocated Yinzers. True story. There's one other pocket in the area, but that's where they're predominant.
Oh, mercy me.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I can't wait till all the TV networks have a snooze of a broadcast on Friday, because
all the trades will be done by Wednesday.
Well, no, history has shown that all the deals will be done a couple days ahead of time.
Right.
And usually we'd have seen more than just let's be honest, one real deal for Tanev by this point. There would have been two or three significant moves. So it's just telling me everyone's going to stand their ground and do nothing.
Well, it's not going to be nothing, Pat. You know, they'll tout that they had, you know, in the years when everyone thought they were going to do nothing, they'll tout, you know, they had the third most trades of any trade deadline. Yeah, but it was all, and not even pawn pieces. It was all like spare dice in your collection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you only pull out that six sided die when you need 10D to roll damage on something. Yeah, I'm still playing D&D. Shut up. But otherwise, it just sort of sits there. Oh, but it's a trade. It counts. Yeah, it's for two minor league guys who, you know, are 17th on your depth chart at any position.
Mm-hmm. Yes, every team that wins a championship needs depth, but the CHL, for all its faults, their trade windows, they get it done right. There's less speculation throughout the year, and there are only certain periods where a child can be moved to a completely new school.
Just,
but it seems to work for all parties involved.
And three kids who haven't been born yet are being traded because that's where they're going to get drafted.
Right.
You know, the draft picks, you know, where you draft 15-year-old kids that are barely 10 right now, probably even younger, you know, not drafting the players directly. You people, stop it. You know what I mean? When they're trading a 2034 first round draft pick to, you know, Kootenai.
Or someone named Caden. Pick your spelling.
Yeah.
Somebody named Caden, yeah. Or Caden.
Or yes. Jaden or Braden.
I will not dox anyone on the middle school lacrosse team I'm coaching, but there are quite a few WHL names.
Oh, mercy.
Mm-hmm.
All great kids.
Well, sure. They didn't. It's not like, yeah, they came out of the womb and named themselves.
Right. That's not their fault.
none of them or their parents seem to be from the Pacific Northwest or from, you know, Alberta.
Watch it.
Look.
It's Vancouver, okay? It's all Vancouver.
It is Alberta. And
I'm sorry. The British Pacific North. Southwest. Okay, the Pacific Southwest, and I'm not talking about the U.S.
You have no idea how many arguments I've gotten into with people over that.
I know.
Damn it, Pat. You had to open that. You had to open that. Mm-hmm. You sat there with that grin on your face, and you took the grenade to your mouth. You pulled the pin with your teeth while you were gritting, sort of sat there and looked at everyone and just lobbed it into the room and went,
So, that's because I did this, I'm erasing the number. We're back down to zero. It was all my fault.
It's a good run while it lasted, folks.
We had, what, 5 weeks?
No. We hit double digits.
Yeah.
Really? That's quite a feat considering you have me on this podcast.
Well,
and I have a geography degree.
This is what, you know, it generally would take either, it was generally myself, you know, loading something up or you loading something up and me running, you know, one of the two of us would fire it and then the conversation would start. No. This time he came in, he cannonballed the kiddie pool. We were in there just splashing around our water wings with our noodles and, you know, just having a grand old time. And in he came with his frickin' Tommy Bahama, you know, printed shorts, big old 15-year-old kid, and cannonballed the kiddie pool.
And he doesn't even go there.
It's
you're not wrong. I don't. I'm not even the kid that doesn't go there but shows up at every event every weekend while couch surfing or something. Mm-hmm. No.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that the dam's been broken, what can we talk about?
Nothing. No. We're ending the damn show. That's it. He came in and cannonballed the cannonballed our lovely kiddie pool. We were in there minding our business, splashing around, having a grand old time.
Being good. We were being good.
Being good. You know, I had my, you know, My Little Pony blow up surf tube that I had going. No. I'm turning this car around.
This has been the 3B3 Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at 3B3 Podcast. We're available for NHL consulting at reasonable fees.